You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to a new episode. This episode is the 36th episode. It's called Shred It Up Off.
In Response.
A legacy podcast. I'm Daniel.
And I'm Peter Plank.
And we're talking about legacy.
Most of the time.
So as you know, and as you can of course obviously hear, we are not in our what I would call the triple state as a chemist. Do you know what this is, Peter?
It's something chemical.
Well, actually, I mean, this is actually not a chemical thing, but it is a physical thing. Well, you know, there is like a substance like water, for example.
Yeah.
There are three forms.
Stages.
Yeah.
Or forms.
Yeah.
Which is liquid, gas form, and solid form.
Yes, exactly. Three phases.
Solid state.
Yeah, exactly. So three aggregate phases that you can say, and there is a certain condition at a certain pressure and temperature where all these three phases are combined, which is called the triple point. And normally we are, with Phil involved, we are basically at our triple point, but he's missing today.
Yeah. And do you know which joke I prepared for this?
I'm not sure.
I said, I would have said something like, yeah, normally we're here having our threesome, but today we have our twosome. So that means the intellectual distance we two have here.
This, I think it's not a matter of distance, but our intellectual distance is rather what we like to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely can agree on this also. So, but Phil, but why Phil is not here? Because he is actually preparing for his overall master's degree. As we know, he's a painter.
In real life?
In real life, not in magic. And for this, he has to take a test. And actually, today he finished his
practical work.
Practical work, exactly, yes. So what is still missing is like the theoretical test that is tomorrow, and he prepared for this weeks, I think, and of course...
I would say months, actually.
Months, yes. I mean, of course, it is, the course did last for half a year, but specifically for the test, he practiced and studied, of course, so we couldn't be here today. But anyway, this shouldn't be of a matter. We can still talk about legacy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, we have some topics. Phil wrote us some topics that he wants us to talk about. So, yeah, he is here
in our
spirits, in our hearts. So,
yeah. Awesome. But before we dive into the topics, why don't we thank our patrons?
Yeah, would be a good point to thank our two patrons, Matt Duncan and Chino.
I don't know who Chino is, but...
Yeah, he's just a random guy in the internet.
Probably
plays some like big mono green decks in Legacy and stuff like that.
Okay, I didn't know this, but yeah.
I mean, I think of Chino like a Timmy, I would say.
So shout out to Chino and Matt Duncan. Yes, awesome. Our patrons to support us.
So
what's up in your mind, actually, Peter? Because we haven't seen each other for also quite some time now. I mean, last episode, basically, right?
I think so. Maybe an FNM in between.
Maybe some FNM, yes. But what have you done in the meantime?
What have I done? Yeah. University, yada, 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 I would say.
Okay.
Some personal stuff, but nothing to really talk about. My girlfriend has now COVID.
So oh, yeah.
That's happened. And yeah, I'm playing still hoops.
But you yourself also had it, right?
Yeah, I had it prior to the last episode. That's the reason why we...
Sure, sure, sure.
had one.
So we are all immune. This is what we said in the last time. But still, yeah. the numbers are, of course, declining, but still.
Yeah. I wouldn't say immune because I know someone related to someone I know. Or it's not that far away that catched COVID 1 month after catching COVID. Yeah. So
this can happen, of course, also.
It's something else.
But yeah, but your girlfriend is basically fine, right?
So it's now it's fine after 2 weeks, yeah. But she has to keep being tested so that she can go outside again.
Yeah. And she will be free on Friday, you said, right?
On Saturday,
yeah. Saturday. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So still a few days to go.
Yeah.
But yeah. But I have to finish my section of the week or section of the episode or start off with the Peter's recommendations of films and movies and series.
Okay. Yeah.
He enjoys.
So what can you recommend to our viewers?
I completely forgot in the last few episodes a few series that I wanted to recommend. Mm-hmm. First of all, it's Assassination Classroom. Top notch.
I think I actually know this. Is this like a Japanese or Asian version?
It's an anime.
Yeah, an anime.
With an enemy, which is basically like a fast squid.
Yes, I know this series. Yeah, I think I've seen it. I didn't watch it, but
you've seen it somewhere.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
I mean, it's in the top levels of Netflix and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, but it's two series. It's two seasons. It's completed afterwards with a wholesome story, and I really, really liked it. Then, because I'm currently watching The Office, I can recommend season two of Space Force, which was also quite enjoyable. Mm-hmm. If you like the Steve Carell
type of humor, right?
Type of humor, yeah. Exactly.
The Office is just great.
The Office is really, really good.
In a dense sense, I definitely will take this advice or this recommendation and maybe have a look at Space Force. It sounds similar in that sense that is like you explained to me, he's a head of a military troop or something like this.
Yeah, he's like the head of a military department, Space Force. Yeah. Which is on the same level as the Air Force, but he's talking to scientists and other stuff, and so it's similar to the office environment.
Okay, that sounds actually quite nice. So they get the discrepancy between, like, you have a military head of chief basically, and some scientist experts knowing what they're doing basically, and then he comes in.
And so you have to fight against, like in The Office, he fights against the different branches of Dunder Mifflin, and these are like the Air Force and stuff like that, or the how are they called that go in the water?
The Marine, basically.
The Marines. Yeah. And you have to fight. They have to fight against like the other paper branches, which are like staplers in the office, and so they fight against Russia and China.
So
you have these type of things also there.
Awesome.
And for the last one, I have to recommend Final Space, which is unfortunately the final season of Final Space. It's discontinued after season 3, but it's really, really, really good.
My only question I have here about this is, does it have a good ending?
It has a good ending.
But you're not really convinced.
But the problem is that it has like an open ending, which would have needed a season 4.
Okay. So
it's not completely finished in...
Okay. It seems like they kind of wanted to have some backdoor open if, under some circumstances, there would be a season 4.
It's not like a backdoor. It's like the giant front door of
So this is not really satisfactory when they say, oh, we're going to discontinue. But the ending is open, so maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like... I mean, I think it wasn't known that it is discontinued after the season 3.
Okay, so they made it, and then afterwards the decision was made. Okay, yeah, that's really, really bad.
It's like, do you know Timeless?
I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah, it's also really, really good. Mm-hmm. So, final
another recommendation.
And the ending was shit because they needed another season. But afterwards, the producers said, yeah, we're going to give you 4 episodes to finish. And they did a really, really good job on that.
Okay. So normally, it was, this is like a disaster.
No, it was really, really good. For 4 episodes, it's a clean, top-notch finish.
Really? Okay.
So I can really, really recommend Timeless.
Nice, nice. So under these circumstances, they did a good job to bring it to a nice end that you can
even if
have...
you know if you didn't know this,
yeah,
it's a clean ending. So it's
okay, nice.
Like not even forced at all.
That's cool. Yeah. So one of the few seasons or the series is actually to have a good ending, because I think this is rather rare that series have a really satisfactory ending that everything is done and the viewer is satisfied in some ways. Only other one that I can think of right now is maybe Dr. House that I've heard, which has a really
good ending. Dr. House has a really, really top notch.
Don't spoiler, because I still need to watch it.
It's so fucking good. it's like perfect.
Okay, this is nice, yeah.
And yeah, that's something I fear for Blacklist. Because Blacklist is now in season 9 or something like that.
Okay, that's quite long already, yeah.
Yeah. Can be kind of dragged out with, there is this. So
yeah,
kind of looking forward to finishing the season or the series. Awesome. So, but what happened in your life then?
Well, not so much season. The only thing that I can say is that I've watched the newest season of Snowpiercer to the end. I won't go into details because you said you still have to watch it.
Yeah.
So, but overall, I can say I liked the episode quite a bit, and I'm happy for the rest of the season, because I think season 4 and 5 is already confirmed.
Okay, that's nice.
2 more seasons at least, and I really like this series. This is basically what I can contribute to this season or series.
So there is sun on the horizon.
Yeah,
if we can say it like that,
kind of like this. Other than that, I am quite a bit busy. For university, I only have half a year, well, it's even less so, 4 months, actually, until I'm finished with my PhD. And I'm working really hard to get everything done in time now. And it's a little bit stressful, but it's good because, you know, things are getting finished and I'm getting my everything that I need for finishing the PhD thesis together and doing the last final bits, let's say. And it feels good to be able to really come to this end, let's say.
Yeah.
But it will be stressful for the next few months for sure. That's really for sure. Other than that, in the last few weeks, I've been playing a lot of a new deck, actually. I'm not sure if I have talked about this last day. I'm digging Jeskai now of Legacy.
You told.
I told. Because maybe we can talk about this
later.
Yeah,
later.
Sure, sure. This would be really nice. So heading to FNM's definitely weekly and enjoying this deck. Or I'm trying different versions out. But yeah, more on this later. And yeah, basically that's actually it for my personal beings, at the moment at least.
Okay.
Preparing for Bologna, but this is also one topic that we can talk about. And I think dive into the topics.
Should we deep dive into?
Deep dive.
Into Legacy.
Why is an episode called Shredder It Up?
I think we are going to talking about politicians shreddering their documents so that nobody knows what they did.
Corruption is a big problem, and we want to talk about it here.
So set yourself aside and we talk about Ledger Shredder, which is apparently now a Legacy staple. I mean, apparently, not a staple, but...
Kind of.
A good playable card.
The next huge hot tech, it's... Not really skyrocketed, but I mean, it's kind of a bulk rare.
I mean, it's bumped from a 30 cent card to a 5 to 6 euro card.
Yeah,
so
trending upwards to $7-$8, I think, or euros, depending on where you are. I don't know how this hype came up, but to give this a little bit more perspective.
I think we have to explain the card at first, if some of the listeners...
Of course, yeah, this is the rare from New Cabana, a bird.
It's a bird.
Two mana, one in...
It's one in the blue.
One in the blue.
It's a 1/3 flying creature, and it has the ability... whenever a player casts their second spell this turn.
Yeah.
So that means if it's your turn and you cast two spells, you can connive.
I think so. This is
which has the ability of you draw X cards and then discard X cards, and this creature gets an amount of +1/+1 counters equal to the number of non-land card discarded space.
But is it like an ability that can be modified depending on the numbering? Or is Knife always just one?
Because some of them have X. Like there is the legend.
Okay.
In this case, it's just one.
Yeah.
There is a bird that gives a creature connive X, where X is the number of attacking creatures.
Oh, okay.
In this case, it's just you draw one card, discard a card.
Yeah.
If it's an on-land card, it gains +1. It gets a +1/+1 counter. And it can happen up to four times each turn cycle. Because on your turn, you and your opponent, and on the opponent's turn...
Or twice each turn, basically. Yeah. This twice is what can happen. A lot of players are trying this out. I mean, in Delver, it has picked up some steam.
Yeah.
Actually, I think instead of Delver, right? I mean, there are some different versions.
It can be instead of Delver, but yeah, I don't really see it. For me, it seems just like a bad Dragon's Rage Channeler.
Since in a way that you have to bin cards, let's say.
No, it's in the way that it costs 2 mana.
Yeah, but overall you need to invest some cards, and if you don't have any cards in your hands, for example, it would be in the minimum case you just mill a card, right?
Yeah.
So you have to bin cards for the bird to get bigger.
Yeah.
And after two activations, in the ideal case, it would be a 3 attacking creature.
It's a 3/5.
I mean, and you have a little bit of filtering effect because, of course, you can choose what to discard. But yeah, my Dragon Rage Channeler works still a little bit differently.
The thing is, I think this is a really, really good card in the Delver Mirror.
The Dragon Rage Channeler or the...
No, the Ledger Shredder.
Yeah.
Because the stat line is just perfect versus Delver.
Mm-hmm.
Get one connive trigger up, and it's a 2/4, which is perfect for the Delver blocking.
It's
gets two triggers up, it's a 3/4. A 3/5, which blocks the Dragon Search Channeler block. Really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it feeds the Murktide Regent. So I kind of see it's being played.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just not that exciting of a design, I would say.
It's quite fair, actually. I mean, yeah, it's a
reasonable card.
It's just a reasonable card, yeah. But apparently reasonable that people are at least trying it at Legacy.
Yeah.
And man, not speaking of different form, because the card also sees massive play in Pioneer and in Modern also.
Yeah.
But speaking of Legacy specifically, I think the card, I tried it actually, and I tried it in Jeskai Control.
Yeah, I kind of like it as a side put choice. Or do you play it in main board?
I tried it in main deck, and some people at least in the control Discord also would try it main deck. For example, there is one person that you for sure know is Ozymandias,
for sure,
Legacy Grinder to a certain extent, I would say. He plays different versions of Jeskai from time to time, and his first first. Let's say reaction to the card would be that it would be a two I think a solid two off in Jessica Deck's main deck going forward. I mean, this could be the case. And I thought to myself, why not try it in the FNM?
Yeah.
At some point. And I did this in the last week's FNM. And honestly, the card shield felt very mediocre. Yeah. I did cast it once or twice and...
It doesn't seem exciting from the outside.
To be fair, I did play it in a control mirror.
Okay.
And in a mirror, it is quite iffy in a sense. Why? Because what I don't like about the Knife ability is it is not a May. So you have to draw a card. And imagine... Nazid is...
Hull Breach.
Nazid is less of a problem because, let's say, if you can control your own spells, of course. Yeah. But if, say, your opponent casts two spells on their turn, you still can draw a card because Nazid doesn't prevent the first card from being drawn. But Hullbreacher would be a problem, I would think, because if the flash in Hullbreacher in response to the trigger, you don't get to draw a card, but you discard a card.
Yeah, or they play Hull Breach and then a Ponder or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is also a problem.
Yeah. But other than that, it is a nice threat, of course. But I think, well, the trigger alone, I'm not sure if it is worth to have a two mana creature because you're opposing Swords to Plowshares life again against... This is the problem when you play Murktides.
Yeah, the thing is... That was the reason I said as a cyber choice, because in these matchups, you board it in because the Swords of Plowshares go out. So,
but this feels kind of cheesy.
Yeah, it's just a cheese way. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think there were some matchups. I mean, like the Mentor.
Mm-hmm.
But Mentor is just a way, way, way better threat.
Yeah, yeah. Because
and the Mentor the threats are
splitting up. It's a card advantage in itself, and it's a win con in itself, in a bottle all combined.
Yeah, and it lines very, very well up with Swords of Plowshares because it gets two other cards.
Yep.
And with that, it makes ritual card advantage. Yeah.
So as a grindy card in control mirrors, I'm not sure if it's all that good. Against Delver, I think it could be nice. Get one trigger, block basically everything except Murktide. That's quite fine. And as a kind of a threat to pressure your opponent as a control player, well, it is an alternative way to eventually win. It is fine, I would say. Nothing spectacular or overly exciting, in my opinion. It is fine. I'm not sure if it's... I think if you talk about control aspects in other control versions, maybe you can... Maybe compare it to Baleful's Tricks in some way. It is also two mana. It is a body.
But the Baleful's Tricks doesn't draw a card.
Yeah, it doesn't draw a card.
And it blocks everything of Delver and deals with it.
Yeah, that's true. This is so it kind of feels a little bit below Strix in some way.
Yeah. I mean, Strix is a top-notch card to compare to. But yeah, it's just, it doesn't feel that good, actually.
So. It is a better threat because it can get higher powers and attack.
It can better close out the game, which is something that Grixis needed.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side, I do not know if Grixis wants this card.
Don't think
because
so.
Because you have the Baleful Strix there. Yeah. I mean, maybe it gets over the Snapcaster Mages, but... Yeah, I don't know if you need that much card selection, and Snap Custom Mage does really, really well with the cooldowns commands and stuff like that. So
difficult.
Yeah,
but overall, I'm just a little bit surprised of all the hype. Honestly.
Yeah, it happened out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It the card feels a little bit like Pteramander, I think. It's just a hype that happens for a small time, and then it lays down.
I could very well see this scenario to be the outcome of this year.
Yeah.
That maybe it is playable, but you don't have to play it. It's not a staple. I don't also think so that like in 2 or 3 months from now, I don't think that we see Delver lists playing a 4-off Legend Shredder.
It will for sure not be a 4-off. Yep. Maybe the 2-off is like the point, but as I asked around like, what do you really, really want to knock off of Delver if you play then? Because typically you play like 4 Delver Secrets, 4 Dragon Switch Channeler, 4 Murktide Regions, and then you have most of the time the 2 of Brazen Borer.
Mm-hmm. One or two of
them. I can see removing one of the Brazen Borer, but I don't see anything from the one drops getting cut. And kind of with Ledger Shredder, the Murktide Regions get even better as a 4 of. So, I don't think that the first Brazen Borer is cuttable from Delver. It's such a good card in the main deck.
You need one, yeah. I think so.
I think you need one. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you have the selection to find the one of.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's just a really, really good and needful card.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Maybe, I mean, I'm not sure actually. Have you seen some lists that...
They cut the Murktide most of the time.
They cut the Murktide for...
For a Ledger Shredder. So really? They play 3 Murktide, 2 Ledger Shredder, 4 Delver, 4 Dragon Switch Channeler, and 2 okay. Brazen Borer.
And have people also tried cutting...
1 Brazen Borer, yeah.
Have they tried to cut the Dragon Switch Channeler?
You would cut the first... you would cut the 4th Delver before even touching... Or the 1st Delver before even touching a single Dragon Switch Channeler.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing that would kind of be a little bit more convenient is that all your threats would be blue.
Yeah.
If you would cut Dragon Rage Channel.
Which would make it worse against the Pyroblast main deck meta.
This yes. But overall, it would make basics better. And
that's true.
Mana base would be, or the need to fetch for red would be less of a problem. Or
yeah, it less wouldn't high. Be needed if you don't have Dragon Rage Channel. Dragon Rage Channel and Dragavan are the sole reason for going for the Volcanic Islands.
Yeah.
In the first turn. I mean, Ragavan is banned nowadays, but the tech kind of happened with the 2 cards.
Speaking of Pyroblast or main deck Pyroblast meta, I think this is really what sums up Legacy right now. I think a lot of people are having 5 plus Pyroblasts in their 75 if they are playing red.
I currently are only playing 4.
Maybe this is a mistake.
I mean, the 4 are in the main deck, but...
Yeah, yeah, okay. This is, of course, a little bit different. But
yeah,
a lot of Delver players, control decks, they have 5 or maybe 1 to 2 copies main deck, actually, and then 3 to 4 additional in the sideboard. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see it happening because you have the meta share of like 23% of Delver, if I recommend correctly. Then you have
eight cast,
and the really big thing currently is like you need something to handle Murktide, and you need to have something that handles Kappa on the stack, and Pyro and Red Elemental Blast are the thing that ties those two things together.
Yeah.
So it's kind of self-explanatory that the card is currently showing up that hard, even though Seeds of Innocence are going up and. But like every deck that doesn't play any green in it kind of has to play the Pyroblast to deal with Kappa Cannoneer or deal with it with any other way.
With any other way.
Like a Chalism Zero and stuff like that.
Can we just quickly talk about how absolutely absurd Kappa Cannoneer is?
It's really, really cool. It triggers on its own.
It triggers on its own. It has basically... it costs basically 1 mana, right? Kind of.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a Delph ability a little bit differently.
It's kind of like, how is it called? There is the thing where you can tap your creatures. It's on Court of Calling. Evoke. It's like Evoke for artifacts.
Exactly. But you don't need like all this mana in your mana pool. You just need 1 blue and some artifacts, ideally. It is a threat on its own. It triggers on its own. It is basically untouchable because of its ward ability. And on top, because it triggered, right? It's unblockable. It has invasion.
Yeah. It's a really, really good finisher. It was exactly
what the hell
8 cast needed.
Because of course.
The thing 8 cast needed was a good, reliable finisher. Because you had... cards that can do something like you were playing like Psy back in the days like 2 months ago. But yeah, you were playing Psy, Master of Optimus and stuff like that that could mm-hmm. finish the game, or some people played the Pain the Grindstone combo in it, which I'm a fan of. But yeah, Kappa Cannoneer was just a thing that mm-hmm. made the deck, because you now had use of the like 79,000 artifacts running around. And yeah,
that's the case now. I mean, it's fine, I think. But in a vacuum, the card is just absurd compared to other cards. Like, this is insane, man. Like, I think I kind of would, if you have a Delph card in the same way, that's just a threat, like, I don't know, a Gurmic Angler, for example. I mean, it's different colors, of course, but this has so many things added to it. And yeah, like the Gurmic Angler is just a 5/5. I mean, what is a 5/5 for one mana? It's basically nothing, right? it's similar like this.
Yeah, I mean, the Angler was really, really good. But if you think about the Gurmic Angler with Ward 4, it would also be good. Mm-hmm. And if you think about the Gurmic Angler that gets +1/+1 for mm-hmm. every second card that goes into the graveyard, it would be kind of insane.
It would be insane, yeah.
And that's the thing with mm-hmm. Artifact. Yep. In the 8-cost shells.
Anyways, this is most of the reasons why we have Pyroblasts.
Yeah.
And this kind of, I think, heads us towards the topic that Phil gave us.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about it. Because we know we have about a little bit less than a month now to prepare for our special Bologna event that we are, of course, all three will be attending to in June. And for this, Philip asked us the question, how do we approach, like, preparing for a tournament like this? Do we go for a meta game, like, for example, main deck Pyroblast that we see in some legacy decks right now? Or do we actually tackle the field as a whole? Like, what is more realistic that I will run into? And do I want to have answers for everything, more or less?
Yeah.
Or just focus on the best
on a
decks.
Few things, yeah.
Yeah. This is an interesting question, I think.
Yeah.
What do you think is your answer to this? How would you go about this?
I mean, I'm currently a little bit on the face, like, I don't want to be dead to anything that hard, but on the other hand, mm-hmm. it's like you kind of have to sacrifice some matchups mm-hmm. to be better as a whole. If you have the bad matchup, like, once every 100 games, mm-hmm. it kind of be okay that you lose every time versus them. Yeah. On the other hand, if you have like a bad Delver matchup, it doesn't make sense to play in the tournaments right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because
True.
If your Delver matchup isn't that great, it's kind of hard to justify it.
True.
And therefore, something like that Brian Cook is always saying is like, he's preparing for the winner's meta game.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose the first two rounds, you're in the loser's meta game. So it's like a whole different playing field to play against.
True, yeah.
And if you're going up against the winner's meta game, you will be playing a lot more against the top-notch decks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're playing in the loser's meta game, you will play against like Genopile or like the... For how is it called? Where you sacrifice your veteran explorer.
Nick Fit
and stuff like that. Which, not to say they are bad decks, but
they tend to be more on the losers.
Yeah.
Because the win percentage isn't that high, otherwise they would be on the top
and
meta list.
It doesn't mean that nobody can play Nick Fit to a top notch finish.
For sure.
Because if you know your deck in Legacy, it goes far.
Yeah.
So even though like High Tide isn't that big mm-hmm. of a deal, you can count on Marcus Ewald going to a top 8 of
probably
most of the tournaments he will attend in paper.
Probably.
Yeah, not too big. So that's kind of the thing. So I think you have to sacrifice a few things for a few meta games, for a few decks that aren't that present in the meta mm-hmm. to have a good Delver matchup, to have a good matchup like against the top decks of the field, something like 8-cast and stuff like that. So my thing kind of is to prepare good. Mm-hmm. And yeah,
the easiest answer. Just prepare good.
just prepare good.
I think I would agree certainly with basically all the points that you made. What I try to do is also, of course, when you attend to a tournament and you know in Legacy right now, of course, Delver is the best deck, you need to be able to consistently beat this deck. You need to have a strategy behind this. Yeah. But in terms of tournament finishes and things that get reported to the overall Magic community, like with Goldfish or the challenges and something like this, this influences the deck decisions of a lot of people. Yeah. And I like the approach that I originally had from a talk that was given by Patrick Chapin, if you know him. He's not really that active in Magic anymore, but he used to be a very good Magic theoretical. He wrote some of the Magic books that we all know, and next level deck building.
He actually tweeted something today.
Really? Okay, nice. I didn't have a look at this.
It was how to approach a tournament. So.
Oh, nice.
I mean, from a mind perspective.
From a mind.
Don't expect anything because the most people that attend a big tournament will lose.
So. Okay. Yeah, of course. But I don't know which time it was, but it's way back then. He gave a speech, and it made this maybe also part of his books, where he said, if I want to prepare for a tournament this weekend, I would have a look at the results from last weekend and see at the top decks.
Yeah.
And most of the people would choose the top decks because they prepared for, I don't know, if they have had the best finishes last week, right?
Yeah.
So this, like, if I don't know, Death and Texas won last week, then many people will also pick up Death and Texas for the next tournament.
Yeah.
So to be one step ahead of these people is, I would have to choose a deck that is actually good against Death and Texas. Maybe Storm. I don't know. A combo deck could be a reason for this, but Chapin would take this even a step further sometimes and would outplay these people that think, I want to deal or defeat the last week's best deck by choosing Storm. And then Patrick would choose a deck that is actually good against Storm because he actually wants to be ahead of them and actually beat those people. I mean, of course, sometimes you can bite your own tail in some way in Legacy perspective is because maybe this deck that is good against Storm is then
really bad against Death and Texas.
This could be a problem. Yeah. But I think this kind of mindset is quite useful when you want to prepare for a big tournament.
Yeah.
And in that sense, yes, preparing for the best deck is definitely true. Either you can play it if you recognize, okay, this is just the best thing you can do to your abilities. This is also very prone to your own abilities that you have. And the other thing that is very important is, of course, since Legacy is such a big format where you can specialize on one specific deck.
Yeah.
Maybe you just pick it up and focus on what matchups are bad for yourself or for your deck specifically.
Yeah.
Like, when you're playing Reanimator, you need to beat Leyland of the Void. Don't necessarily need to beat like a Delver, you know what I mean?
Do you mean specifically the guys in our local meta that play
for example.
Leyland Helm in the main deck? Yeah. Like last week, there were like three or four of them there.
In a sense, what I'm trying to say is, since Legacy is such a big format, we've had a shit ton lot of different decks.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't make sense to overwhelm yourself and try to beat everything. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
And it doesn't make sense.
I mean, you can get like about 45 against the field, but this won't win you any tournament. Yeah. You have to go like, these are the top four decks. You have at least 60% win percentage against those. Yeah. Even better, 70 plus. Yeah. Then you can expect to go into the top eight like every four or five or 10 events because everything has to line up even though you have like a 70% win percentage against like the top 4 or 5 decks of the meta game.
I guess in a way, maybe statistically speaking, like we established, the scariest thing to overcome is the first 2 or 3 rounds.
Yeah.
Because there you could potentially face anything.
Yeah.
And then if you are 3-0 and you head into the next round, I think it's pretty safe that you might face now a Delver deck or the decks that you actually want to beat.
Yeah.
In a dense sense, this actually just shows how broken the buy system was actually in
yeah, HGPs. It was really, really insane because it's
such an advantage.
It made you having to play the 2 scary rounds basically, because everyone with 2-0 or 2-0 is something with buys, there are a few troll decks in there, but at 3-0, 4-0, you can expect to play against a winner's metagame, which is the top notch of the metagame, which is the Delver players, the Jeskab Reacher decks and stuff like that, which are 8 cast, which are currently the best performing decks in Legacy. So with buys, you kind of had to face only 1 or 2 scary rounds. Mm-hmm. And without buys, you have to face like 4 scary rounds. And if you think about it, basically a 50-50 there. Yeah. It means only, I mean, in calculating currently in my mind, but only like a few percentages will come out on top with 4 wins. So yeah, it's kind of hard to justify a buy system. So
true.
I mean, it's not hard to justify it, because as a tournament organizer, what's really, really good for you is if you can promote faces. And if you want to promote faces, you want to see faces a lot of time at top. So that means with the buy system, you can guarantee yourself that every tournament, if you choose like 20 good Magic players, mm-hmm. like 4 or 5 of them will be at the top tables that you can promote. Mm-hmm. So these will be the faces of your tournament series. Yeah. So it's kind of good for the tournament organizer and for those people. But on the other hand, it's kind of bad for the other ones.
Yeah, it gets harder to be at the top sometime.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of Legacy, since it is a very also a community-driven format in a sense, and I don't want to divide here too big, but when we compare the online metagame to a paper meta game that we might expect in Bologna, for example, you know, a lot of people will attend to this tournament that are, I don't know, long time Legacy players. They have their beloved foiled out or black border deck, I don't know. In that sense, I think it would also make sense to factor some things that actually people readily don't play their best decks anymore. And I think that maybe even Delver won't be overly represented in the tournament.
I kind of have to disagree here, because currently chosen, especially America, mm-hmm. that the online metagame isn't that far away of the paper metagame.
Okay.
Currently the metagames are nearly identical. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that we have drastic shifts, especially since it's not like that Delver players nowadays need like these reserve discards and these reserve discards. They only need some of the new imprint cards. And if you played Delver before, you're playing Delver now. If you're playing Grixis Delver back then, you're playing Blue-Red Delver now.
Yeah.
So because you just needed maybe the one of Volcanic because you only had 3. Because previously, Blue Delver most of the time played 3 Volcanic Islands. So I kind of think that the metagame can be really, really, I think, similar to the online metagame, but I think it can be even so that it's a little bit more 8 cast, because like Kappa Cannoneer is in paper not that expensive as in.
Could be the case.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have some kind of Stompy decks, if you played this Echo version at the past, this is kind of similar, right?
I think it could be that it's a little bit more Stompy.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, there are Stompy players there, like Blue-Reds are Mono-Red Stompy, Dragon Stompy and stuff like that with the newer builds. But I think regarding that, it's nearly identical to the online meta game.
Could be the case, yeah. I think this will certainly be very hard to predict, of course. But I think the best idea would be just to prepare for the best decks and learn to play your deck. This is also very important. Don't always, in my opinion, prepare against the other decks. What do you against this? What do you against this? Piloting the own deck to perfection, let's say, maybe would add more win percentages than being prepared to everything.
And something that I have to do before setting up my deck list for Bologna is I will put up like the top 10, 15 decks of the metagame and I will sideboard for them. Mm-hmm. I will make a sideboard. How I do this, I currently haven't done it for the newer version of my deck, but then I know which sideboard slots are really, really good, which sideboard slots are valuable, how much is the meta share of the deck, how much am I expected to play against it. And if there is something like a sideboard slot that only happens like once or twice in the top 15 for like not blue Red Delver, but like, yeah, green Red Depths is also a good deck, but like against paint or something like it's a 2-3% of the meta game. And it's only for this matchup, I have to kick it out and put a better card in it or a card that targeted painter and
another
blue red armor, or something
more flexible.
Like that.
Yeah. Have you heard about the concept of elephanting?
I heard the concept of elephanting. Yeah.
This is would be the exact application for this.
Yeah.
It is in not like it is a little bit more abstract and a little bit more free, and I think a little bit more effort, but it can ultimately help to get to the exact sideboard and also main deck configuration for your deck that you want to have. The idea is that you choose your matchups and you have your deck, of course, and you prepare your 60 card
against each specific meta game.
The ideal 60 card version of your deck against each matchup, and then you can gather the overlaps and see what kind of cards you want in the main deck, and the remaining cards should then be fitted into the sideboard somewhere. And I really like this approach. Maybe this will something I want to try with Jeskai, because I personally will most likely be playing Jeskai.
Yeah,
I'm dipping my toes here into control a little bit. I always said, like you also, Peter, that I'm really bad at control playing because it is a matter of playing fast. But
yeah, you have to be really, really fast to play a control deck to a good finish.
Completely. But I have to say, it gets better over time, in my experience at least. And in Legacy right now, there's a lot of ways where you can more or less quickly win with a control deck.
Yeah.
When we think about maybe Days Undoing and Narset, of course. And not always of the time, but a lot of the time when the combo is assembled, people will scoop. Rightfully so, of course. But of course, technically, it is not a win button. Yeah. But sometimes, okay, the advantage is too big. Let's go to the next game. This is what happens a lot of the time. Then Timeless Dragon, for example. It is, in the early games, good to fix your mana, draw cards, maybe shuffle away cards from Brainstorm or something like this. And it can be quickly a 4-4 threat if you eternalize it from the graveyard. They can quickly win the game. Or then combined with the Wandering Emperor. I mean, this is just a really, really wonderful card right now in Legacy. And I just realized also that this is almost a staple in Jeskai control variants right now. It gets around Blast. It is an instant speed win con in a sense. Yeah. You can. It's not like, oh, I have to tap out for Chase. It's not that I have to tap out for Wandering Emperor. I just can flash it in and directly activate it. I can exile a Dark Depths. I can exile, I don't know, any creature that is attacking. I can gain life against aggro decks and burner or something like this, or Delver, of course. and it is a thread on its own.
Yeah,
it can, it generates
tokens,
and this is a really, really wonderful design for a control deck in that sense. For example, I really love this card, and yeah, I definitely will play it in my list going forward for sure.
Yeah, it's a really, really sweet one of most. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, I don't think that you want two of those,
I have seen this with two main deck also, but yeah.
But I really, really like the one of them.
One of for sure, yeah.
Because it just is the really, really good removal. Mm-hmm. And you can follow up with getting counters on stuff like that,
yeah,
on creatures, or generating the tokens. Yeah. And it's just, yeah, really, really good. I really, really like it. And yeah, as you said, you're going to play Breacher, mm-hmm, in Bologna. I am nearly 100% certain I will play a Red Painter.
This is the deck you've been working on quite a bit now.
I've been working on since a year or something like that.
Yeah.
And
now it's time to crush opponents.
Yeah, I have to try. I mean, I really like the deck.
Me too. I really think this is a really cool looking and nice version of Painter.
But yeah, I have to test a lot against Kappa Cannoneer because...
You have to blast. I mean, this could be good.
It could be good. And with acceleration, I can get up to 5 mana to... Mm-hmm. Swords to Plowshare it or something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, Artifactate, of course, is most of the time double-sided, and this will hurt you a lot as well.
Yeah, so the introducing of Seeds of Innocence.
Yeah.
And like the Hidetsugo is like insane. So maybe I even have to skip the deck and, mm-hmm, play something like Blue Red Delver. Because for Blue Red Delver, I'm kind of missing a Volcanic, but mm-hmm, I think I can borrow it from someone.
Well, but I'm not sure, because you're experienced with Painter in that sense. It makes sense that you stick to the thing, yeah, that you know, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Especially in Legacy, right? I mean, Artifact Hate is a problem, but you have...
Or I can go on a streak with Black White Helm again. I think Delver is just... Painter is just a little bit better position than like Helm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I kind of like the Leyland main deck. They are really, really good in the metagame.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But Helm is a card for another friend of mine.
Yeah,
I mean, I could borrow the Scrublands, so that would be not the trouble.
Yeah, for sure. We can get hooked up each other with cards. That would be no problem. Because we have a nice community that supports each other.
Maybe I should play Didgeridoos. But so, yeah, I'm going to be playing Painter. So what I would say is that
we can maybe summarize these thoughts, yeah, when it comes to deck tuning. I would say personally, like Philip asked us, would you go for a specific metagame or would you go like a broader approach? I think when you go to the broader approach, there's a little bit of a trap that, yep, you focus on specific fringe matchups too hard. I'm personally more a fan, like I think you also agree on this, to be more on a general sense, like always have the bigger picture in mind.
Yeah, prepare Don't. Against like 75% of the field,
yeah,
which is most of the time the top 10 decks,
mm-hmm,
because you are most likely expected to,
yeah,
play against those. I mean, you can have a plan against the lower decks.
Sure.
But prepare your deck most of the time against, mm-hmm, the top 10 decks.
And I think in terms of cyber cards or in general cards maybe, think of applicability of cards against multiple matchups.
Yeah.
Sometimes cards overlap, of course, and against which matchups they are good against. And if you can add a card that is maybe, let's say, good against, for example, if I wanted to have a good cyber card against Storm and I need another card against Elves, I would choose Canonist over Deafening Silence, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
For Storm, it more or less is the same. Of course, Canonist is a little bit worse because they can chain some artifacts together, but still they won't realistically win with Canonist in play.
Yeah.
And Canonist is also a fantastic card against Elves.
And Ledger Shredder.
And Ledger Shredder. By the way, As I'm coming back to this, this is just one interaction that that we had the discussion on. I don't know if we talked about this in the podcast, but people, we had a situation. I just need to get this out of my head now. At the FNM, they had Narset on the battlefield.
Hellbreacher.
And Hellbreacher. And they cast Days Undoing. The question is, what happens for your opponent?
And it's your turn. So.
And it is your turn. You have Narset, Hellbreacher, and you cast Days Undoing. What happens with your opponent?
He draws exactly zero cards. And you gain 7 treasures.
Yeah. So, because it may be a little bit weird, because in a sense, it doesn't matter if Narset is on the battlefield or not.
Yeah.
Because Narset's effect will never happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Narset's effect is not a replacement effect. It is just an effect that prevents yourself from drawing ever your second card. And Hellbreacher is a replacement effect that is true for the very first card that you would draw. And in that sense, you never get to draw a card. And
The same thing happened with you cycling a card before, so you drew exactly one card with only the Narset out, then the Hellbreacher comes, then he casts Days Undoing, he doesn't get any treasure, and you don't get any card.
This is actually a scenario what you covered in this dream, right? Is this true? You mentioned
could be, yeah.
In a commented stream from our Legacy League. This is actually perfect timing.
I covered it because of the thing that it happened on the opponent's turn.
Yeah.
Because most of the time you cast Days Undoing in your opponent's draw step.
Yeah.
So because they will draw the first card for the turn.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Then
everything
will get
replaced because it's in the draw step with Teferi out.
Yeah.
So yeah. Which is a really, really interesting interaction with those two cards.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just wanted to add something to prepare for a tournament because the deck is something that you need to prepare. But one thing that's really, really important for playing tournaments is like getting in some sleep on the day before.
Oh yeah.
Which will be hard for us, maybe. But we are sleeping in an apartment together, but I can tell you I need a little bit of sleep before.
Sure.
So I need the 5 to 6 hours.
I mean, that's minimum.
It's the least amount
I
need.
Yeah.
And something that I, for myself, really, really enjoy is taking some fruits to the venue. I have some, how is it called? Like
dried fruit?
It's like dry fruit. Yeah, it's like, I think in German it's called Aprikosen or something like that.
Yeah,
which are apricots. Yeah, which are in a plastic bag that I can take it from a local
small
supermarket.
Healthy snacks.
Yeah, it's small, healthy, but with sugar, and sugar is really, really important for the mind.
Mm.
So,
sure.
In this case, sugar is good for you. Normally, sugar bad, but if you have to think a lot, sugar is really, really important. Not too
you
much.
You need the energy.
But you need some amount.
Yeah, especially for a long tournament like this.
Exactly, if you're playing like
hydrate.
8, 9, 10 rounds,
you
need the water, you need the sugar. And don't eat the really, really fat, meaty something because this will make you go down, like going for kebab and stuff like that.
After the tournament.
After the tournament, it's great. But in between, not that great.
I think this actually wraps it up quite nicely.
Yeah.
We have covered a lot of topics regarding the upcoming tournament. We will continue to prepare for this. And the next time, we will be again joined by Philip.
Yeah. It will be in 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We will talk about our trip to Bologna because the episode will be released while we are on the road.
Sure.
We have to talk about if we are gonna make something special in Bologna, if you make some content there.
Yeah, it would be nice. Maybe we can
Set up something with like guests.
Could be cool,
venue with
some little interviews.
Yeah, with microphones and stuff like that.
Maybe we can make this happen, We'll try to.
We will try to, but regarding that, we will hear a lot more in the next episode.
Yeah. So. And we now need to get the following again in Happy Place. We can follow us where we are on Twitter, of course.
Yeah.
At response_legacy, I think.
I'm not sure. I really, yeah, really hope that you looked it up.
No.
But you can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. Mm-hmm. You can find us on, yeah, these are the most platforms. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Patreon.
Patreon.
If you want to support us, would be very, very appreciated.
In a sense, we also have our link tree that we add.
And we have a merch shop if you want some clothing, yeah, regarding the Austrian Legacy League or, mm-hmm, the In Response Legacy podcast.
The In Response in-response.myspreadshop.com
would be the link. And do we have the handle for In Response a Legacy Twitter?
It is @response_legacy, yeah.
So
the same is true for Patreon, of course. Response_legacy.
Response_legacy. Okay, that's good to know. So where can we find you, Daniel?
Also at Twitter. @FlyingDelver would be my handle. And on the website, of course, that's also supporting the podcast. We have a little podcast page that you might want to look at, where we get to know a little bit each other in terms of what we like to do, how we went to the podcast. You can find this podcast webpage connected to my website. It is called greatnessatanycost.com. And where can we find you, Peter, then?
You can find me on Twitter. It's @unicornlord, but the O in the Lord is the zero. And I think we're going to
wrap it up.
Close the episode.
And see you next time.
In response, the end.
This was In Response, a Legacy podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.